listening to BizConnect, the show that promotes and connects businesses to do business. Tweet us live at Kent_biz.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you so much for joining us today for another edition of BizConnect, the bi-weekly business radio show. And what I need to do before we go any further is just bring my fabulous co-host into the fray, Tracy Westall.
Hello.
Tracy, it worked again.
Hello, Dave.
We love our technology, don't we?
We do.
Great to have you with me today. We're still very much socially distancing, aren't we, you and I?
We are. Do you know what? I was actually, if it wasn't for the gardeners that have been round cutting all the grass, I would have been in my garden talking to you now, to be quite honest with you, Martin. But obviously, the sound of the lawnmower would not have gone down too well with our listeners.
No. So it might have been a little bit distracting. Yeah.
Just a little. But how are you anyway?
Yeah, good, thanks. Good. I think everybody's going to be enjoying some proper summer weather this week, aren't they, by the sounds of things?
Oh, yes, it's going to be scorchio.
It's going to be a hot one. So we're going to need plenty of refreshing liquid, aren't we, to keep us cool?
Well, funny you should say that, because I saw an article this week in the Kent Online about how well Kent Vineyards are doing and where they are for the English Wine Week.
Yes.
And as we know, because the summers are getting a little warmer than they were in the past, our Kent growers are doing exceptionally well. And it just seems to be that booze has soared by 67% of households have been preparing their involuntary lock-ins, so that's kind of the market. That and craft ales, that kind of sector has done very well.
Yeah.
And I know that listening on the news yesterday, there's a couple of places that do cheese and wine tasting. They've been actually doing a proper cheese and wine tasting event on Zoom. So you go and buy your packages, they send it out to you, and you sit there as a group of people tasting the cheese and drinking the wine, which is fabulous.
Isn't that wonderful?
I know
quite a few sort of restaurants and cafes also have been doing like a takeaway service. And
yes.
There's a little restaurant, Little Ships it's called, where I live, down in Ramsgate. And they do like a little hamper, so you can go along and buy a little sort of takeaway picnic hamper and go and have it on the beach, which is lovely, isn't it? What a nice thing to be able to do. So you're right. I mean, I think there has been a boom in off-trade sales, as it were. Obviously, we can't go into pubs and restaurants at the moment, but certainly I think, you know, in terms of supermarket sales and, you know, popping down to your kind of, you know, your local eatery that perhaps is doing a takeaway service, I think, you know, all of that is, you know, we've kind of found a new market there, haven't we?
Well, yes, and, you know, I think it's really nice that because you may not be able to get your normal milk, so to speak, and to have something different and taste something that's locally grown here in Kent is just fantastic stuff. And, you know, it is keeping another small business that works very hard in business during these times and have a lovely little as you go.
Well, let's hope a lot of these businesses that have been forward thinking with their business, you know, let's hope they continue to enjoy that that newfound custom, you know, when we're back to normal. But there's a lot going on at the moment, isn't there? Because I think on the 4th of July, the government, and certainly the hospitality industry, are expecting the government to announce, you know, them being able to, or those kinds of businesses being able to reopen again. And and before that, tomorrow, I believe we've got some social distancing news that we're all expecting as well.
Well, I hope so. I mean, that would make a huge amount of difference to shop owners. I mean, I know that a lot of shops opened their doors last Monday, And there was so many people out and about. And I've just seen some photos from Maidstone Town Centre on that day.
Mm.
It was very busy. And I think that, you know, once people start feeling a bit more confident about going out and going to these shops, then we'll see more and more people actually going out and buying stuff from premises rather than online.
Mm.
Because I still think that a lot of us do actually really like to have a look and a feel of what we might be purchasing. And it's just one of the things that us Brits like to do, which is shop.
Well, I think particularly the female of the species, not necessarily the male species. I'm not a big shopper.
You wait for Christmas and your birthday for those pairs of socks.
Yeah, no, I'm not a big shopper myself, but I kind of get where you're coming from on that. But it's really interesting with the pubs, isn't it? And I do feel, you know, pubs, restaurants, hotels, I guess, as well. I do feel, you know, a huge amount of sympathy for them, because not only have they had to wait the longest for any kind of news, and they kind of knew that that would always be the case, because the government were quite clear about that. But then, you know, you've got this situation where, you know, they've been preparing their businesses for the 4th of July, which is a Saturday, actually. I happen to know that because I play golf with a guy who's American, and he's bringing some beers along for us that day, I think, after the game. Socially distanced, of course. So they've obviously been preparing on the basis that it's 2 metres. And they've kind of been gearing all their businesses around that, and, you know, so you know, table layouts, and there's a very sort of forward-thinking Ibiza-style bar in Canterbury, isn't there, that we've been reading about, and they've created a whole sort of outdoor area. But it's all based on 2 metres. And, you know, a lot of businesses have said in the hospitality sector, we can't make it work with 2 metres. But nevertheless, you know, a lot have clearly kind of gone down that road and tried. But, you know, potentially tomorrow, the government might come out and say, actually, it's only 1 metre. And so, you know, they've got to kind of rejig it all again, you know.
I'm sure that they'll be able to cope, and I think that the 2 metre rule, realistically, for opening a business like a restaurant, would you feel comfortable being in that sort of situation? Would you have enough covers to actually be viable for your business more than anything? Because obviously you've got your outgoings, you've got your staff salary costs, and you've got to get the food in and everything else. And if you're not going to sell as much, then there's going to be a huge amount of wastage. So I think that, you know, we'll all be starting to go out in the pubs and the restaurants. And I think realistically, you know, supporting those smaller family-run bars, restaurants and cafes is so paramount.
Mm.
Because these are the guys that your money actually puts food on their table.
Mm.
And that doesn't mean to say you should go to anywhere that's more... an international brand, by all means, you can go wherever you want.
But, or a,
you
know, chain.
You know, and there's some really lovely little restaurants and cafes and bars out there. Pop in, say hello, buy a pint, and, you know, you'll make them smile as well.
Mm. I think what's interesting also at the moment is that... I think people are kind of making their own minds up about, you know, what's safe or, you know, what isn't safe in their eyes. And, I mean, I went and had a takeaway myself, you know, last week, which we kind of took down to the seafront and kind of had. But, you know, I noticed in... in the eatery where I got my takeaway, they weren't really practicing any kind of guideline hygiene in terms of, you know, mask and gloves and things like that. They were just kind of going about their normal business. And I think you know, I think in many ways people have kind of made their own mind up about, you know, what's safe and what isn't at the moment. And, you know, people are just kind of getting on with it. And, you know, it's not for it. I mean, you know, you could argue that in theory it's unlawful to, you know, to prepare and serve food in that way. But it's a very difficult thing to kind of police, isn't it, across the general population. And so, you know, at the end of the day, people have just got to kind of be sensible and do what and do what makes sense for them, I guess.
Yeah, and I know that the Food Safety Standards Guide will be out and about to ensure that people do uphold the regulations. But if you're a place selling food anyway, you have to reach certain standards before you can actually sell it to a member of the public, regardless of COVID.
Yes.
But it'd be interesting to see that all the places rip up all these 2 metre. Put 1 metre in.
Gosh.
Go along with black marker pens and just change the 2 for 1 and add 1 in between.
Yeah.
That is a big cost for businesses as well across the board, because, you know, I'm actually looking at buying a screen for our office and an automatic sanitizer unit, and they're very expensive. To be able to put in place. And I know my friend who's got a hair salon, she spends an absolute fortune on things like disposable towels and gowns and things like that, as well as the screens and face masks. So it is a very costly thing to do. So you
have
to weigh all that up as well. But I just want to, you know, wish everyone the best luck when you do open your premises back up to the public, and I urge the public to support your shops in your high street, because we could be set for a very different looking high street in the future. And supporting those smaller businesses, you're supporting the family as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is amazing how quickly things can change. I mean, I've been looking at France, you know, and kind of following what's been going on there. And, you know, they had one of the kind of the strictest lockdowns in terms of, certainly in Europe, in terms of, you know, how that was being administered. And now everything is open. And you know, from what I can tell, there doesn't seem to be any kind of social distancing or anything. So, you know, things can turn around very quickly, and I'm sure, you know, that those businesses can, you know, bounce back as quickly as they had to kind of close the doors. So, you know, let's kind of keep our fingers crossed on that level. But I know there's also, unfortunately, some bad news out there as well, Tracy. That you...
There is. Yes, go outdoors, which... quite a few chains in the Kent area, in Canterbury, Chatham and Tunbridge. They're obviously the specialists in the camping and outdoor disputes. They're a start of the process of putting that business into administration. And obviously that is run by JD Sports Group. So that's very sad to see that go. And obviously the staff that work there. So we'll wait and see. But also my big concern is, generally, these bigger businesses, like the likes of Debenhams and Go Outdoors, etc., have huge buildings, have a lot of floor space, and it would be interesting to see what local authorities decide to do with that floor space going forward, and whether or not there will be a larger company that will be able to utilise that space, or whether or not they might decide to do something like a bit like that place in Dover, where you have different units for smaller businesses.
Like an indoor market or something.
Exactly. And help those businesses become more present on the high street. And I think that would be a very useful and interesting way of doing things. And I'm sure quite a lot of people would love to go into a store. As big as like Go Outdoors in Chatham, it's quite a big space. It's got a big parking area as well, and to be able to utilise that to smaller businesses would be an absolutely ideal thing to do.
More like an emporium rather than, you know, and I think you know, on a business level, you know, that makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Because, you know, why be why be beholden to one large customer, you know, operating in a very, very difficult and challenging kind of sector? And as you say, with all the overheads that kind of go along with running a huge, you know, huge premises like that, you know, would you be better off having, you know, multiple small local independent retailers using that space where, you know, if one, you know, stops trading, then, you know, the rest can still carry on. So, you know, maybe that will be the model.
Yeah, and also, if you're a small business and you're starting out, you know, it becomes a bit of a community.
Mm.
And also, you know, there's be a lot of good that comes out of it where people can get a lot of help and guidance.
Mm.
Because running your own small business is very daunting anyway. And it's, you know, you've really got to think on your feet sometimes about how you're going to push things. And I think that a lot of the smaller businesses have really been able to diversify their business to deal with this pandemic, whereas the large businesses like to go outdoors, Debenhams, Marks & Spencer, etc. It takes them a while because they've got a bigger cost to spin around, whereas smaller businesses can do it on a penny, really, and get out there and do it. But
well, there's certainly a lot of talk about community now, isn't there, and you know, shop local and everything else. So, you know, maybe we're about to go full circle. You know, maybe the big kind of multinationals, certainly on a retail level, you know, maybe they've had their day, and you know, it's time for another way of doing things. So, you know, watch this space. But I think the go outdoors one, it's a bit unfortunate, isn't it, because you know, with all the hot weather we're having, with the kids being off school, you know, with it being very difficult to go abroad for a holiday at the moment, you know, because you're not quite sure, you know, is it quarantine, isn't it quarantine, can't we, are there any flights? I mean, crikey. You could be forgiven for being inclined to say, okay, do you know what, let's just go camping. And then you're going to need all the equipment that those guys sell, but unfortunately they're not going to be open. So just unfortunate timing there, really, I think, isn't it?
Exactly, yes. Mm. And there's another thing I'd like to mention to the guys out there, that the FSB, along with the Institute Directors and Locate Kent and the University of Kent, have actually organised a webinar, which will be on next Friday, 1 till 12. And it's around the Kent Business Summit. And they have some fantastic speakers. It's called Road to Recovery. They have the Kent County Council leader, Councillor Roger Gough, the Bank of England chap, who's very good.
Phil Eckersley.
Phil Eckersley, yes. And Professor Marion Garcia, who's the Dean of Kent Business School at the University of Kent. So if anybody really wants to join that meeting, it's online. You can book a place on it. I can put some links out, and we'll no doubt put a link out on the BizConnect Twitter page. And just join in. It's 12:30 to 1:30 on Friday the 26th of June.
Brilliant. Thanks for that. Look, Tracy, we've got a couple of guests lined up today as well. Tell us who we've got on the show today.
Well, as you're the one with the lineup, I don't know who's first.
Ah, okay.
You've not told me.
No. Well, tell us who's on, and then I'll tell you who's on first.
Okay, well, we've got Graham Marley.
Yeah.
He is from Let's Do Business. And we've got Miguel Calabrese from Blue Rocket Accounting.
Yes.
So who's first?
It's going to be Miguel, actually. So,
is it? Okay.
Yeah, sorry
there
about that. Yeah.
It is all very professional here, guys.
Oh yes, it's all neatly stitched together. So I think what we'll do is we'll play a little bit of music, And then we'll get straight into that first interview with Miguel. And Miguel's going to tell us all about, you know, future planning for your business. There's an awful lot of pressure on businesses, or there's going to be an awful lot of pressure building up on businesses, regardless of what's going on a kind of a lockdown level, because there's going to be huge cash flow pressures. And Miguel gets into some of that in terms of, you know, what businesses can do to kind of alleviate some of those potential problems that we've been kind of storing up for the future. So it's a good interview. Yes. So, yeah. All right. Well, we'll play some music and then we'll come back and we'll get straight into that, I think, Tracy.
Yeah. Fabulous. Okay, then.
Brilliant. I'll catch up with you shortly.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Live at Kent_biz.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and we hope you enjoyed that little bit of music there that we played. What we're going to do now, I think, Tracy, is talk to our first guest.
Yes.
And that's going to be Miguel Calabrese from Blue Rocket Accounting. Miguel, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on again. I know you've been on a couple of times before, but I think it's fair to say we've never had a discussion
in circumstances like we're facing at the moment on a kind of business level. So for everybody out there that doesn't know who you are and who Blue Rocket are, just give us a very brief introduction if you can, in terms of your business and what you do.
Yeah, of course. So I'm Miguel Calabresi, as Martin said, and I'm part of the team at Blue Rocket Accounting. We are accountants and tax advisors based out in Dartford, but we cover pretty much most of Kent and a bit of the southeast. And our main goal really is to help businesses get through any challenges or achieve any opportunities that they have.
So at the moment, I mean, let's kind of bring that straight into the kind of the context of where we are at the moment. I mean, it's I can imagine, you know, we were talking to Simon Morgan, who I know you know quite well, a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying he's never been busier as a business in terms of advising clients on HR issues than he is at the moment. Is that fair to say that it's been the same for you guys as well at Blue Rocket?
Yeah, 100%. During this pandemic, since lockdown, we've almost certainly worked harder than we've ever ever had to before, just purely due to the addition of the new initiatives to support businesses, owners and employees. We've had to take time to understand that, train up on those, and then also identifying which businesses would benefit, that we look after which businesses would benefit from what support, and then relaying that back to clients and businesses so that they too can understand how it helps them. And as I mentioned, as we're in the business, we're in this business to help other businesses thrive. So we embraced that, knowing that what we're doing is helping people that are desperate for information and how they can keep their businesses alive.
But we were talking before the show today, and you were saying that your first step was very much about getting your business geared up for a new way of working as well. Because, you know, you're in the office today, like we are, but none of your staff are. Everybody's working remotely. So I guess your first step, you were saying you had to facilitate that remote working effectively in order to then be able to help clients.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So when lockdown was announced, the decision was basically actually how do we carry on working? So us, much like other businesses, had to step back, look at it objectively and think, okay, what can we get done immediately? How can I get work still flowing? And then it's, okay, we've got that working, let's move to the next step. Who else can we bring back? What's the next step to move forward? For us, fortunately, we've got a good IT company on board that helped us with it. Our systems were a little bit old and needed renewing anyway, so this is just forced our hand buying it. But there were teething problems. I think what the businesses that we've looked after liked is that everything that we're advising or helping, guiding the businesses that we look after, we've done it ourselves. So whether that's having to set up a remote team,
right,
or having to find a new way of working, looking for financing, sourcing the government support, we're in it together. I know that phrase has been bandied around a lot, but that when we share our experience of it, especially when it comes to like the furlough stuff, the conversation always goes, well, this is how we did it. Very much happy to share our documents with you. Here you go.
It's always really, you know, when you're speaking from a position of experience, it's much easier, isn't it, to advise others in terms of the kind of the process that they need to go through. And as you say, we've all been faced with the same challenges. And so we've all had to kind of jump through the same hoops, as it were, in terms of that learning curve and process. So in terms of how you guys have worked with clients, how's that worked in practice? Has it been a case of, you know, as the government initiative has been launched, and I think the first initiative that was launched way back whenever it was in April now was probably C-bills. Was that the coronavirus business interruption loan scheme? Have you taken each initiative in turn and then advised clients, or have you taken a more kind of generic view of their business? How has it actually worked in practice?
So like many companies, we've had to embrace technology and really change our approaches that we've never really used before. to what we was normally doing and get used to different environments. And overall, it's been pretty successful for it. You're right, though. So we could only advise on the way legislation or the support initiatives were given out. So each time a new one was given out, we would research on it and then share the information with our clients. But one of the things that we did do, which has got really good feedback and it's still running now, is that we set up a WhatsApp chat group. It's a closed group that's predominantly made up of our clients with other contacts. And at the beginning of the lockdown, the chat was established where we was sending out information from HMRC directly to that, so people could just receive it instantly. When it come to, and then what that allowed the members of the group to do was to see what other people were doing, share ideas, ask questions, get instant replies.
Mm.
But with individual clients, so you mentioned the CBILS loan. Yeah, we helped with that. So each time a client said, we want to apply for a CBILS loan, we said, okay, we've been through this process. We know how Barclays do it. We know how NatWest do it. We know how Metro Bank do it. So we got used to the formats of what questions they were asking and what information they wanted. So we was able then to guide those clients and say, this is what we need. This is how we need to word it. And this is how we submit it.
That's a really good idea, isn't it, Tracy? The, you know, something as simple as a WhatsApp group, because, you know, I guess sometimes people are a little bit shy in coming forward, Miguel,
yeah,
and raising their hand and, you know, and asking for help because they don't want to appear, naive they're just reluctant to do it ultimately. So that's quite a nice way of people just sharing their kind of learning and actually, you know, reducing your workload in the process as well, because you haven't got 15 people asking the same question.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. And so there's over 100 people in the group, and admittedly there's probably only about 15, 20 active people. Everybody else is just sitting back and taking the information in, but that's what the group is designed to do. Is one person asks one thing, it instantly gets shared out with everybody. Where it really works was when, because the announcements, some of the later announcements that were around like 7 o'clock or something when it all first got announced. So people were asking questions immediately on that and we was able to share feedback. The last thing you want to know is it being the evening, trying to sleep and not knowing what's going to happen the next day. So that helped with that on there.
Were you able to switch your phone off at some point at night time and get some sleep yourself, or did it just kind of, did it ping all night long? Or does it ping all night long?
It does ping all night long, yeah. And we started this initiative, but with our eyes wide open. So I knew it would be like that. So it's okay. Because if someone's asking a question at that time of night, they've obviously got something keeping them up. So to be able to answer them and put their mind at ease is just another step towards what we do as within our business values and our culture.
So, I mean, going back to CBILS, because Tracy, am I right? Was that the first initiative?
Yeah.
I think it wasn't
it? The first initiative.
Yeah. So this was only 80% government guaranteed, wasn't it? And I think at the time it got quite a lot of bad press because of the high street banks and their reluctance to embrace it and adopt it and kind of roll it out. What was your, or what has been your kind of direct experience of CBILS, Miguel, from that point of view? Has it been a fairly easy process or not? Because I think ultimately now it's geared towards larger businesses, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that was the misconception. I think, so just backtracking a bit, the furlough was the first initiative that was sent out, but then for business owners, CBILS was closely followed. They might have even been done at the same time, to be fair.
Mm.
But what people seem to forget that it was still the bank's money that was being lent. It wasn't the government's money, which is why the banks were so protective of who was getting it, especially at an 80% backing from the government. And potentially an unlimited amount that they could borrow, the like capped at levels of turnover. Mm-hmm. But the businesses that we helped, there was a few businesses that came to us and asked, and I've looked at them and I said, don't waste your time. You're not going to get it. This is our experience. Good businesses that have had a bad spell due to the pandemic have received the CBILS loan. If they weren't, if they were not a good business before the pandemic, they wouldn't have got it. Which is why there was so much pressure for the bounce back loans to come in.
Right.
And they were basically self-cert, so everybody got it.
So does that, I mean, you know, reading between the lines there then, does that mean that a lot of the businesses that therefore defaulted to applying for a bounce back loan, what's our kind of view in terms of whether or not those businesses are going to manage to stay the course and ultimately be able to kind of repay that loan? Because again, you know, I think, you know, a lot of people you know, quickly forget, I think, that, you know, it is a loan ultimately that needs to be paid back. But because it's got this kind of 100% government kind of backing, people seem to think that, you know, that it I don't know, it doesn't seem quite as kind of serious, if you like, as a sort of a more traditional bank loan. Is there do you think there's a kind of an impression about, you know, whether or not, you know, we're just paying lip service to the fact that it's a loan and we don't actually need to pay it back, or are business owners serious about, you know, their commitment to doing that?
No, you're 100% right. I think most business owners just grabbed it because of that was that if you're a director of a limited company and you fell through the cracks because you take dividends and small salaries, so the furloughing wasn't available for you at the level that you would normally get paid. When the bounce back loan got granted, it was like, yeah, well, we'll have a bit of that. So I think literally everybody, and just looking at the bank systems, so Barclays and Metro Bank and all of those that literally crashed as soon as it opened because of there were so many applications, businesses just took it, one, because they needed it, but more because they felt left out, I think, from the government help. Whether they can pay it back or not is yet to be seen. But there are, so that there'll be some stuff coming over our social channels over the coming weeks, but there's seven key dates that business owners and self-employed people need to be aware of over the next 12 months. And one of those is first of May 2021, because of that's the anniversary of when the bounce back loan started being advanced to people. So that's effectively their first repayment date. People should be start to plan.
Yeah, that's right.
What's your view on that?
Before, haven't you? You've got all your tax returns in January. The VAT holidays. If you're a business that's taking your corporation tax on a holiday as well, they're all going to need to be paid.
Yeah,
I think we're storing up problems there, Tracy. I mean, what's your view at Pecunia on kind of bounce back loans and?
I think my concern about this, and we had a discussion about this in my bi-weekly meetup we have, is that because businesses don't necessarily need the guidance of their accountant to apply for the bounce back, and it is 25% of their turnover, so the business might only need 15 grand. But because they can take a maximum of 50 grand, and if their turnover, 25% of their turnover can equate to £50,000, they'll take it. They don't necessarily need it.
Right.
And I think that's where one of the big problems is going to be, is people are taking advantage of this loan, but not necessarily realising that at some point it has to be paid back. I know that the interest rate is has been fixed at 2.5%. After the 1st of May 2021, but also, you know, you've got to pay that back, and you've got to really look at everything else that you've withheld back during this next few months heading. So I think that we are going to be heading around sort of the last quarter, first quarter of next year. You're going to see a lot of troubled businesses out there, purely because they've not really thought about the fact that they're going to have to pay this back one way or another.
That's just the tip of the iceberg, isn't it, Miguel? I mean, you've got we've had VAT holidays as well in the interim. So, you know, do you see a situation where we've got all of a sudden pretty much, you know, we've got the perfect storm coming, if you like, all at once, because we've got, you know, VAT returns that haven't been paid this year, that, you know, we need to find the cash for that. We've got the commencement of a CBILS loan repayment or a bounce back loan repayment. We've got staff coming back off furlough. I mean, all of this presumably is going to build up to a huge kind of pressure pot of kind of cash flow bottleneck and issues, is it?
Yeah, 100%. So, which is why we started focusing on these seven key dates over the next 12 months. And you, both of you have touched on what some of them are. But the first one in our eyes is the 15th of September this year, 2020, because of, and the reason we say that is because of, with non-essential shops reopening on the 15th of June, the period of lockdown might not necessarily have been their worst period for cash, because of, they would have stopped paying stuff and they would have just started sitting on it. But essentially, that's the start of their working capital cycle. So in 3 months from the 15th of June, come to the 15th of September, then that's going to be the peak of the cash needed to then, for the money they need to run their business again. So that's for us, that's date number one. If you are reopening, you need to be able to manage the cash to that date. The second one, the second and third come in together. So we've got the 1st of October and the so 1st of October 2020, the 1st of January 2021. And that's because the majority of businesses in the UK have a December or a March financial year end. So those dates, their corporation tax will be due. And the thing to consider is that those dates relate to a period before the pandemic. So some of the businesses that we've seen and we've dealt with, they've actually had really good trading years. And now they're going to have a relatively large corporation tax bill that's going to be coming up for it. There are things you can do, but it's a date that needs to be aware of, that you need to be aware of. The third one is for VAT registered businesses, and that's the 7th of November 2020. And that's because of, that relates to the VAT quarter, 30th September 2020, which for most businesses will be probably their first real trading quarter coming back from lockdown. So it's going to be their first real VAT liability that suddenly appears, and there is no automatic deferral for it. And then coming up now for self-assessment, which you've both touched on, 31st of January 2021. So you've got your normal January self-assessment payment, but then if you did defer your July 2021, that's going to be added on as well. And the thing what people need to be aware of there is that that's a personal debt. It's not in a business name. It's not a company name. It's your name personally.
So, I mean, the key thing for me then really is, I mean, what I'm hearing there is, you know, so many businesses really only see their accountant at year end. In order to do a kind of a very basic kind of compliance accounting job to get accounts filed with Companies House and pay a kind of a corporation tax bill or a personal tax bill, but if you haven't thought about any of this stuff, and I mean, you, in a normal financial year, you would have to be making provision for things like tax and VAT anyway, as part of a normal, a normal quarter's kind of trading activity. But we've got quite exceptional circumstances at the moment, haven't we? And if business owners think that they can go the whole year without talking to their accountant, a lot of them are going to have quite a nasty surprise, aren't they, when it comes to kind of year-end and filing those accounts, by the sounds of it.
I think it's going to come before year-end. So a lot of businesses in this, that if they do only speak to their accountant once a year, which is to discuss the year-end accounts, that's usually 3 or 4 months after the year-end anyway, or even longer in some cases. This stuff is the stuff that you need to start doing today to plan for, because of if you get to those points – and you've not got the cash. Currently, everyone's been a little bit lenient with it, but we've seen it with businesses. People are starting to get back on board with things and starting to get moving. So the novelty is the wrong word, but the excuse of having the pandemic is no longer viable in some cases where work wasn't getting completed or stuff wasn't being paid. Everyone's now actually saying, come on, we're all getting back to it. We need to kickstart what's going on.
Yeah.
So let's get cash and business moving again.
Well, I want to ask you about that then. That's kind of my next question, really. you know, you've just highlighted one of the key dates, I think, in terms of, you know, the furlough scheme coming to an end as of, I think, is it the end of October, Tracy? Or the beginning? I think it's the end of October. Yeah. How do businesses now start to, how do businesses kind of work out, calculate, Miguel, the kind of the offset between paying to bring furloughed staff back into the business versus generating income in order to pay their salaries? You know, it seems to me like a bit of a chicken and egg. If you don't come back to work, if you don't bring key staff back into the workplace now, whether they be sales staff, business development staff, whoever, you're not really going to know what business is out there and therefore what opportunities there are for your business to make money. But at the same time, you've got to be prepared to put your hand in your pocket and actually pay for those furloughed staff to come back into the business when you're not necessarily generating an income. So how do businesses go about working out how they're going to do that and whether they can afford to do that?
Yeah, so the first thing is, and I'll go back to it again, is that they need a cash flow forecast. Cash at the moment is the most important thing, seeing where your ins and your outs are and how long it's going to last and if you're going to get into trouble at 6 months or 3 months' time. Mm. And this is where the C-bills and the bounce back loans should be used in that decision to say, okay, if I can bring back these staff and I can use these loans to cover them, will they generate X amount of income for it then to pay for itself going forward? Like with any salesperson, there's always a cycle, whether it's 3 months, 2 months, or a week. They've always got to start doing something before it turns into income for that business. And that's where businesses need to really now their own sales cycle and understand, well, if I bring back somebody today, how long will it be until that person generates me income? And can I afford for that to happen? And if you can't afford for that to happen, then you have to find an alternative, whether it's the business owner doing it or there's a cheap alternative when it comes to outsourcing to a lead generation company. I'm not too sure.
Yeah.
Or there's a mixture. You keep them. So from July, there'll be the flexi furlough where they can come back part time. So if you've got somebody doing lead gen and then the salesperson goes off and does the calls, then great. Cash is number one, but then you've got to look at your sales cycle to see how quickly they can actually generate the income for you.
Right. So the cash flow forecast template, because I know you guys have a COVID-19 kind of business support page on your website, and things like, you know, cash flow forecast templates are going to kind of really come into their own, aren't they, over the next few months. Businesses really need to work on a kind of worst case scenario, I guess. They need to get everything down on paper in terms of what their outlay looks like versus income to be able to then kind of make those decisions. But you need to see it in black and white rather than kind of, you know, off the top of your head, well, I think I can do this or I think I can do that.
Yeah, and I think also, I mean, I've spoken to some businesses and I've sort of suggested do more than one cash flow forecast. Mm. Do one that's a really positive one that you think that is what you could potentially achieve. Do one where it's not going to be so good, and do one where you're not going to have to be able to, you know, you cannot re-employ at this moment in time your full staff levels. Because then at least that gives you a very good viewpoint of where your business stands, and you can then find a happy medium. Mm. And I think that's really important. And, you know, businesses should understand cash flow forecasting, should be doing this as a normal part of their day-to-day business running. Mm. And it is crucial. And if anyone has any issues, then please speak to your accountant and ask them how you do a cash flow forecast, and then do two or three different scenarios. So at least that gives you a good sort of viewpoint of where you need to go.
I feel an online webinar coming up, Miguel. I think you need to maybe start, you know, set up a webinar to guide business owners through that process, because I think that would be incredibly valuable for people to actually see it and, you know, have you share your screen and see it in the flesh, as it were, because I think, you know, it's going to be the one the one tool, if you like, that will, and the one kind of time investment that will really pay for itself over the next few months.
No, I think that's a very good idea. And also management accounts. Management accounts at this moment in time are extremely important. So, you know, maybe something like that be really good, because I don't think I've seen anything really out there to help, because there's lots of businesses out there that, you know, are quite small and don't understand these fundamentals, because it's quite mind-blowing for them. And having somebody that can really explain it very simply and to tell people to not be frightened of it can really help businesses now, but also in the future, because it will help stabilize businesses a lot more going forward if they manage to survive this. And it is a crisis. You know, there's no two ways about it. There's going to
We could talk about this all day, but unfortunately we haven't got time to do that. Miguel, what I would like you to do, however, is share some information about Blue Rocket in terms of how we can get in touch with you. And I think importantly, I know you've been running a business survey and you've been canvassing opinion from businesses in Kent in particular about the kind of current crisis and where business owners' kind of pain points are. So you have got a COVID kind of 19 dedicated kind of support page on your website. Just give us a shout out for that and how we can kind of you know, use that information resource in our own businesses, please.
So as Martin said, we've got if you go to our website, which is blueRocketAccounting.com, there's a banner that's got the latest on COVID-19 with a button that you can go to, and that's got all the advice and blogs and resources that we've been sharing through all the various channels that we've been helping our clients, just collated in one place. Please feel free to have a look at it, download what you need. If you do have any questions, you can drop me an email on miguel@blueRocketAccounting.com or give us a call on 01322 555 442.
Brilliant. Well, I think the message is clear, Tracy, isn't it? It's know what's coming, and budget for it. And, you know, a cash flow forecast is a one-page summary of, you know, how you see your business expenditure and business income, you know, on a kind of rolling 3 months, 6 month basis, however you want to do it. But the key thing is, you know, get it done and understand what your business is going to look like in 3 months' time, and what those kind of outgoings are going to look like. Because if you have taken a loan out, if you have furloughed staff and they're going to be coming back into the business, you need to budget for all of that, and understand that. Brilliant. Miguel, thank you so much for now.
Thank you, Miguel.
You're very welcome.
This won't be the last time we speak to you this year, because I know we're going to need to come back and address some of these questions again later on in the year. And I think, you know, going into the final quarter might be a good time to do that.
Yeah.
Just to kind of recap on some of this. But for now, thank you so much. Great talking to you. And good luck with your business and managing your clients through this crisis. And we'll come back to you again in the next few months. Thanks, Miguel.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers.
Well, Tracy, what a great interview that was.
I know, we're pulling them all out of the hat at the moment, aren't we?
Some great advice.
Free advice,
And I know cash is something that's very close to your heart always at Pecunia.
Yes, it is. It is. And, you know, from that interview with Miguel, you know, knowing your cash position is going to be so, so critical. Mm. There's a lot of things coming up in between now and the year financial year end in April. So make sure you've got a list of those things and try and mitigate any crisis in between, know. And there are people out there that can help you.
Yep.
And don't, please, guys, don't think that any question is a stupid question. Because there's guys out there that can help you.
Yep. Don't be afraid to put your hand up and ask for help. Yeah, brilliant. Yes. Well, on that note, I think what we should do now is we should have a listen to Graham Marley and have a quick chat with him, because I know that a lot of the kind of the advice and the help that Let's Do Business Group can offer, you know, follows on from what Miguel was saying. So should we have a listen into Graham and learn a bit more about what those guys do and how they can help as well? So
let's
do that right now.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of BizConnect. We are delighted to have with us today as one of our guests Graham Marley, who is Chief Executive of Business Support Group, Let's Do Business Group. Graham, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Martin. Good to be here.
It's lovely to have you with us again. I know you've been on before, but perhaps in slightly different circumstances, not just because we were probably live in the studio all together, but obviously we are living in slightly unique times and certainly unprecedented circumstances. But for our listeners out there, Graham, please, can you just give a brief overview of Let's Do Business Group, who you are and what you guys do?
Yes, so the Let's Do Business Group is a not-for-profit profit organisation. We've been going over 20 years in different guises, and we provide business advice and support to both established businesses and people who are thinking about starting a business across Kent and Sussex.
Right, so you're not a Chamber of Commerce?
No, no, we are what used to be called an enterprise agency. So very much there to provide advice and support, plan how to start up and improve their businesses. And I suppose really in the current times, it's also about helping businesses survive and help them to move forward into sort of a recovery phase.
Mm. So just give us a flavour for the types of initiatives that you've been involved with, since the government stepped in and at the end of March and we all went into a sort of a lockdown scenario. I would imagine you've been incredibly busy, haven't you?
Yes, it has been somewhat manic over the course of the last couple of months. A lot of what we've been doing has been finance related, so providing advice and support to businesses to help them navigate their finances. We run our own loan finance scheme as well and have for the last 10 years or so. And through that, we provide two particular services, if you like. One is around startup loans, and perhaps we'll have a chat about that a bit later on. And the other is around loans to established businesses. And up until February, I guess it was, those loans were very much aimed at businesses that were looking to grow and develop, but they couldn't access finance from their banks for whatever reasons. And usually that's around not having security available to their bank. So we've been active in that market for a number of years, and we're lending £100,000 to businesses that have got growth potential. Clearly, almost overnight, the lockdown started. Businesses stopped looking at the growth opportunities and started thinking about, well, how can we continue to trade? Once we sort of move through the current lockdown phase into phase, so we started looking at how we could pivot our business to answer those requirements. I know if you'll be aware, and the listeners will be aware, the government introduced the Coronavirus Business Interruption Loan Scheme, CBILS, we lovingly call it.
It didn't get a very good press when it sort of first launched. There seemed to be a sort of reluctance on the part of the banks to embrace that.
Yes, I think that's very fair to say that. It was reasonably sprung on them, and banks being the monoliths that they are, find it fairly difficult to move swiftly into sort of new products and new markets. Normally it's the sort of thing they plan years in advance, and that wasn't feasible. So we very much were on the front foot because we were one of 40 or so lenders that could lend through the CBILS scheme, mm-hmm. lend under the previous Enterprise Finance Guarantee scheme. So we were quickly on the front foot, thinking that there's an opportunity for us to move quickly where maybe the banks can't.
Presumably, you were still applying the same process in terms of, you know, looking at each individual application on merit and affordability for the business as the banks would have been doing.
Yeah, very much so. I suppose the other people in the market are some of the sort of fintech companies such as, you know, Funding Circle and Iowaka, whose models are. In as much as there's a lot of algorithm that goes into assessing a proposition and, you know, in many cases, requirements for security. Whereas ours is much more of an approach, understanding the business and the individuals running the business, and thorough assessment of financial information, both old financial information and current financial information, and then looking at how the business is planning to move forward, which clearly is very difficult in these somewhat uncertain times. But yes, our approach is sort of more old school bank manager, know your customer, understand their business, and help them to understand what their requirements are and whether they should be committing to further borrowing.
But therein sort of lay the problem, I guess, because, you know, businesses applying for the loans, I guess we're in a distressed state in need of quick cash. And CBILS didn't necessarily sort of slot into that as a sort of a nice, neat product, did it?
No, I think part of the issue was possibly one of panic. And that's certainly what our experience was in the first probably 4 weeks. We were absolutely deluged by businesses who were panicking about what they were going to do and how they were going to fund the business. And the government's range of support helped to sort of staunch, if that's the right word, the level of inquiries a little bit, because there were other opportunities for funding, whether that be the small grant scheme or the furlough scheme, or the opportunity to defer tax payments. All of those things helped to reduce the concern that many businesses had. But in those first few weeks, it really was sort of panic stations and all hands to the pump. Mm. So I think it was something like 150 inquiries in the first couple of weeks, more than we would normally have in the course of a year. Mm. We're also getting inquiries from all parts of the country as well, which particularly helped. So we took an early decision to say, well, you know, the businesses should be going to their banks first. They know the customer and they should be able to turn around relatively quickly. Mm-hmm. Banks are all being swamped as well. Mm-hmm. Some acted better and so, you know, from feedback that we've heard from customers, NatWest and Barclays got on board reasonably quickly with CBILS. The other banks not quite so quickly. It was still taking 5, 6, 7 weeks for businesses to get an answer. Mm. In some cases, we're still finding that even now. Mm. So we then moved to a position of, right, we think that the banks will do the bigger deals quicker, and more challenging for smaller businesses to access funding. So we pivoted to concentrate on the sub 50,000 market, which was then wiped out overnight by the government's announcement of the bounce back loans.
Yes.
So again, we had to pivot our business. So we're now back at lending between 50 and 100,000 to fill again what the gap in the market is, which is with the smaller end of SME lending.
Yeah. So
for us as a business, it's been difficult because we've had to keep changing with government policy. But we are now getting loans out to businesses, Kent and Sussex, in that £50,000 to £100,000 area. where the businesses either are struggling to get an answer from their bank, or their banks have said, no, we can't help you for whatever reason.
So things have stabilised a little bit then now. You have a more of a sort of standard working kind of pattern and routine to the week. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, certainly from the lending perspective, you know, I'm not expecting any major announcements from the government to change the available loan schemes, you know, in the course of the next couple of months. So much better position to move forward and promote our offer of support to businesses. You know, one of the loans that we've done through the CBIL scheme is to a home in Ramsgate. What they found was that their bank, although they'd been supportive to a point, didn't want to lend further into that sector. So they weren't able to access CBILs through their bank, so they came to us via one of their business advisors. So we went through, did their normal due diligence with customers online, of course, looked at their financial information, looked at their plans. They were able to stay open during the crisis because they were putting up staff at one of the local NHS hospitals, clearly not able to charge as much as they would normally. Their restaurant wasn't open, so again, that was another loss of income stream. But we were able to make an assessment that this was a relatively low-risk loan. You know, long-standing business, very good track record, profitability over a number of years. So even if this year is difficult, you would expect them to make a profit next year and be able to repay the loan. So we agreed a CBILS loan of $50,000 for them, which has drawn down just over the last week or so. So, you know, there are still businesses out there struggling, and you know, we're here and ready to help. Clearly, we agree everything. You know, we do consider the risk, and also we do take our responsibilities as a lender very seriously. And you know, if we don't think it is the right thing for the business to do, we'll explain why we don't think it's a good thing to do, and you know, look at whether there are other options that business should be considering.
And we should mention at this point as well, obviously, that you've got two very capable people on the ground here in Kent, based at the Maidstone Terrace. We've got Roger Keach, who most people know, and we've got Lisa Young as well, haven't we? So yeah. If people need advice, presumably, you know, they are on hand in the first instance to, you know, to have a conversation.
Yes, they are. And Lisa's from a banking background, so understands the lending side of things very well. But they have a much wider team as well. So we've another three lending managers, plus another two members of staff who've got lending experience. We've actually got a team of around eight total who support clients with their requirements or questions around financing. It's not just CBILS. Although that's probably for many the most appropriate game in town at the moment, either CBILS or the bounce back loans. There may be other options that businesses should be exploring. You know, things like invoice finance or factoring. You know, that might be a solution. Or refinancing existing bits of kit might be a way to go. It's around looking at the total requirements of the business and trying to find the right solution. And as we're an FCA accredited finance broker, and help businesses with that side of things, as well as with more traditional lending.
I want to move away from crisis management financing, if for want of a better word at the moment, and talk about startup finance, because I guess in a normal sort of in a normal quarter, you would have a volume of startup loan applications that you process. Has that been significantly down on what you would normally expect, say in, you know, at the start of quarter two, or you know, are there still a lot of people out there looking to raise finance to get a business off the ground, Graham?
Yeah, that's a very good question, actually, and the answer has surprised us. And as you're aware, Martin, we're a provider under the government startup loan scheme, which provides support to people starting, so businesses trading under 2 years. And we, prior to the crisis, were doing around 40 loans, and we quite thought that that would be wiped out immediately, and it wasn't. And we've drawn down similar sort of slight reduction, but a similar sort of level of loans over the course of the last couple of months, which is really interesting. There are more people in that recently started category than we would normally have, but the numbers have held up surprisingly well. One of the challenges we've had is again around volumes, where quality of applications haven't been as strong as they would normally be. And again, I think that goes back to sort of the panic that people felt over that first month, 6 weeks of really not knowing what the future was going to hold. We're now seeing a sort of reversal, if you like, back to normal, where the quality is slowly improving. I think we're probably have a month or two of slightly lower levels of inquiries, but I think what we will see probably the end of summer and the autumn is a sharp up. As unemployment increases, more people will start thinking about starting a business. Unfortunately, there'll be a lot of business closures over the course of the next 6 months or so, and it's possible that the hospitality tourism sector might be reasonably badly affected if we don't get a summer season. But I think that'll give an opportunity for startups and people looking to take over businesses that have closed. So I think what we'll see is a turn, if you like, in that sector. The startup loan service is a really good one for anyone that is thinking about starting up in business. You know, again, a proper and thorough assessment of a business plan. Interest rate on a startup loan is 6%. There's no arrangement fee, so it's relatively low cost borrowing as well. And yes, we're very much open for business.
And I think the advantage of the startup loan program also is it's very much a sort of a hand-holding exercise through the application process to work with business owners, you know, through Roger or through Lisa, for example, locally here in Kent, to actually get a credible business plan in place to make sure that the business has the best possible chance of success from the outset. So that for me is the kind of the key part at the beginning. It's to kind of, you know, to understand how your business is going to make money, to understand its marketplace and its proposition ultimately. And, you know, wherever possible, research the consumer or business demand on the back of that as well.
Yeah, very much so. And it is, again, it all comes down to making sure that the individual is borrowing for a purpose that they're going to be able to, A, repay the debt, and B, make a living from. So you try and add some value in the sort of decision-making process just to make sure that people are doing the right thing and doing it in the right way. And as you say, that's where support from people like Lisa, I think, is invaluable to businesses. Yeah, just giving a business plan a sense check and sometimes asking some difficult questions. You know, it's in the right spirit. We want to make the loans as much as people want to take the loans, but it's got to be right for them.
Do you think, Graham, that through what you've seen over the last few months with the businesses going for the likes of the CBILS and the business bounce back loan, and also these businesses that are wanting to start up, do you think that there's quite a gap in the knowledge that these business owners have in relation to how to run a business, and especially on the point of business positioning, especially on their cash bases? It's something that's not really been push forward for business owners to take up on some kind of educational workshop to understand these formalities. And in some cases, they just assume the accountant will sort that out for them.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely spot on in terms of the finances. I think I would think the majority of people that have come through the various workshops that we've run over the last 20 years, I would say 75% of them, at least, possibly more, financial side of planning is the bit that they're not confident about. The other 15 or so percent, 20%, is probably the marketing side of things that is their weakness. It's so important. Any client comes for a loan, whether it be a startup loan or a growth loan or a CBILS loan, we will always ask for a cash flow forecast.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the time, it's the mystery that people feel about a cash flow forecast, whereas actually they're quite straightforward.
Yeah.
You've got to be able to make a judgment of, what your income is. Mm. You should know or be able to research what the majority of your outgoings are going to be, particularly your fixed costs.
Mm.
And it's one minus the other is your cash.
Yeah.
So it's relatively straightforward, but it's about demystifying it.
Mm.
And I think that's what we're good at in terms of the one-to-one support we provide all through provision. Unfortunately, over the years, where there has been startup workshop provision, across the country. So Barclays used to sponsor the National Enterprise Network to deliver a nationwide program of startup workshops. Been very good in the past at sponsoring workshops in particular areas. But when the credit crunch came, however many years ago that was now, those things have disappeared. So it's come down to organisations such as Let's Do Business Group try to find pots of money to run startup programmes. And last year and into this year, we've been able to get some sponsorship from NatWest to run a program called Herbiz, which is at female entrepreneurs or women that would like to start up businesses.
So you've got a closing date of the 24th of June, I think, haven't you, for the next program in Kent and East Sussex. So just tell us a little bit about that, Graham.
Well, I'm glad you knew what the date was, because I realised just as we started the call that I hadn't written the date down, so I knew you'd be prepared, Martin. So, so Herbiz, last year we ran that as a face-to-face program across five or six different areas in Sussex and Kent. Clearly, we can't face-to-face at the moment. So what we've done is we've trialed a program in East Sussex last month, and we're now starting to promote cohorts, which, as you say, they in June with a July start for the program. And what clients will get from that is four workshops over four different days, exploring and clarifying your business idea, understanding the numbers, which is what we were talking about, Tracy, around sort of forecasting and how you go about creating projections, developing your business model and how you kickstart your plan, and how you start shaping your marketing strategy. So it covers all the elements of things that you need to do when you're planning your business. Clearly, there's opportunities for interaction with the other participants, as well as our two trainers who are very experienced in providing support both through the Herbiz program and other startup programs that we've run in the past. So we had some really nice feedback from the first cohort, so now we're looking at broadening it into two cohorts that we've run almost simultaneously, so run them side by side. And there's a small cash prize as well of £500 for the person that develops the best business idea and business plan between those two cohorts. So hopefully that'll spark some interest and some participants coming from East Sussex.
Definitely. So how do people apply for that, Graham? Is there, do we need to go onto your website to find out more information about that?
They can come onto the group website, but there's also more information at herbizvirtual, that's H-E-R-B-I-Z, virtual.eventbrite.co.uk. And that's got more information and how you can register to apply.
Yeah, but again, the key point there, I think, is that, you know, it's about doing the thinking before you actually start spending any money, for proper. So, you know, the more thorough you can be in that planning process, whether it be, you know, cash flow forecasting or marketing up front, the better chance you've got of hitting the ground running ultimately. And I guess at the moment, that's going to be more critical than ever, isn't it?
Yeah, that's just what I was going to say. You know, it's always important to plan with a business, but in, you know, although it's going to be really difficult to plan in the current environment, you know, we don't know how long lockdown's going to go on for. We don't know whether there'll be a second wave of the virus and we'll all be locked down again. I really hope not. I need a haircut, so I'd really need to get to a barber's fairly soon. I've got it booked, so I don't need any more disasters. But it is so important to plan to the best of your knowledge and ability, and build yourself some wriggle room into your thinking as well, in case things don't go, as we all hope they will. That, you know, this is, you know, we're coming towards the end of the process.
Yeah, I mean, cash reserves is something that I know I talk a lot about to smaller businesses, because a lot of them don't have a huge pot of cash reserve. But I think you're right, it's very key. And one of the things that I've been telling people time and time again is, don't just do one cash flow forecast, do several, depending on what could potentially happen. Because, you know, forearmed is forewarned. And yes, at this time, it is difficult because you don't know when you're going to open, you don't know when you're going to be fully, you know, trading, and how that trading flow is going to really work. But also, another big thing that a lot of businesses don't realise is that to even during this period, is to have a look at how they've dealt with this, do a 360 of their business, and also to try and put some kind of business survival package together. Because you're right, we could potentially see another lockdown, depending on what happens. But, you know, next year is going to be a very rough ride for a lot of businesses. And it's about the continuation of survival and how to try and mitigate that for your business, and to try and keep that business structure in some kind of sort of trading formation, and making sure that you don't go down with everybody else.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think there's some sectors where that's even more important that they do the planning. And it's probably sectors, or a sector in particular, that historically doesn't do a lot of planning, which is hospitality and tourism.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the majority of those businesses, particularly in the coastal areas, you know, they make all their money in the summer. Mm. They live off that in the winter.
Yeah.
My worry for them is that they won't make as much money in the summer. They won't be... probably won't be so many visitors. So they need to be looking not only in the very short term, but they need to be thinking about how they get through the next winter as well. And, you know, normally, I dealt with a lot of them when, in the dim and distant past, when I was in the bank, and they knew exactly what would come in during the summer. They knew it would get them through the winter, and they knew Easter, and that's all they cared about, because they knew it worked. It worked every year. It ain't going to work this year. So you need to be thinking now about what the next steps are, because at the moment they might be thinking, well, actually, I think I'll get through having to take a bounce back loan. Well, actually, you need to be damn sure, because the bounce back loans won't be available forever.
No.
Might be here September or October.
We'll probably see a PPL scenario there, won't we? As soon as they announce the closing date for bounce back loans, there'll be a flood of applications, no doubt.
So, yeah, there may well be.
Yeah, Graham,
we could give a lot of notice.
Absolutely. Graham, we could talk all day, because I did want to pick your brains about the future and how you see the You know, the programs like CBILS and Bounce Back Loan coming to an end. But unfortunately, we have run out of time. So what I think we'll do is we'll have to get you back in 3 months' time, where we've all had the kind of benefit of hindsight, and
yeah,
and it's much easier to kind of look at things retrospectively, of course, as it always is. So, but for the moment, thank you so much for joining us. Just tell us quickly how people can get in touch with you with regard to, you know, business support advice, finance advice, just kind of pick your brains advice at the moment. What's the best way to get in touch?
The best way to contact us is through the website letsdobusinessgroup.co.uk, and from that route people's inquiries through to the most appropriate team member. I say we've got a wide team, so we've always got someone who can help, or if not, to the most appropriate support.
Brilliant. Graham, thank you so much for joining us. Absolutely fascinating to hear from someone on the sharp end of dealing with all the loan applications and, as you say, having to kind of pivot your business to kind of reflect the current environment in terms of incentives and grants and loans and everything else that's coming down the pipe. So, fantastic. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us today. And
Well, that was the brilliant Graham Marley, Chief Executive of Let's Do Business Group. We are fast coming to the end of today's show, but Tracy and I will be back in 2 weeks' time with another show and two more fabulous guests. But for now, we'd both like to say goodbye, and we'll speak to you again in a couple of weeks' time. Thanks for listening.
Again, don't know when, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do. Drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know? Tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. Again, don't know when, don't know.